tuned into anything potable. The most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
Welcome so to why you mad even. Boston Celtics Podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, possible hero, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen, and we are coming to you the Monday after one of the best performances we have seen in the TD Garden in a while. Jay, I mean, you were there in person. What is it like to be able to feast your eyes and just watch a legend at work like the amazing Sladek perform at halftime? What is that like to be there in person?
I actually didn't watch
the amazing you missed Sladek. Even though
I'm a huge fan, I was working. I had to take a piss at halftime, and I just missed Sladek, man, which is sad because he's a lot better than the Red Panda. But anyway, Jason Tatum didn't risk his life quite like the amazing Sladek. He didn't stand on top of chairs, you know, on one hand. But he did score.
He euphorically.
Kevin Durant. Yeah. That one move he had in the fourth quarter was basically the equivalent of what the amazing Sladek does. Like, you just don't know how he survived the double team. And somehow, I think he lost his dribble. Like, I don't think that was planned.
Oh, no, I think it was just a great recovery.
Yeah, like he did not mean to put the ball out there between those two guys and then yank it back and then just big boy Nick Claxton at the rim. But he did. And he made it work. And he made just about everything work. That was probably the most impressive performance of his career. Maybe the game against the Nets in the playoffs last season. But I don't know if even like the 60-point performance against the Spurs compares, because that game, like, he wasn't really great in the first half, and obviously he wasn't going to get against Kevin Durant. So yeah, it might have been the best game of his career. I don't know. He's had a lot of really great games. So
it was damn impressive, and it's just they had an answer for absolutely everything. I think it's absolutely recency bias. Hand up, recency bias. But I think it's absolutely Tatum's best game of his career. Like, even though like the 50 points last year was in the playoffs, the stakes of this game felt higher just because it was so obvious that the Nets were going to like just walk away with that series. This felt like a big game and a big test for the Celtics. And Durant had a great game of his own, scoring 37 points. But it was just impressive. I think it was a total team victory. And I think the play at the end, it just felt like Tatum was like, sometimes he just gets locked in and he's scoring, and it's just like he's going to try and get a shot up no matter what. And I think in the Spurs game and in that Nets game last year in the playoffs, it was like he was the only option. Here, it feels like he was making the right reads, making the right play. And I think like the big play at the end of the game where he passed to Smart, who made another good pass to Jaylen Brown, who knocked down the three at the end of the shot clock, was like evident of this. It was just like they were showing Tatum a lot of attention, and it felt like he was making the right decision every time and then still managed to score 54 points, if that's somehow possible. Like, he was unselfishly scored 54, which I think is a great sign for the Celtics.
Yeah, I think the Celtics also had a great awareness that Tatum was the one who had it going. And everybody else was just content to try to set him up on every single possession. Like, that fourth quarter, they basically went to him every single time. There was one play, Marcus Smart actually ended up shooting a three like at the end of the shot clock on the possession. But earlier in the possession, he had a wide open three and just passed it up because he wanted to get the ball to Jason Tatum. There were other times when, you know, Jaylen Brown and Tatum were running sets together and Jalen was not even considering going to make a play himself. He was just like, we want to get Tatum in a good matchup. So I think there was an awareness and an execution from all of the Celtics that went into the night. And you're right. Like at the end of a 54-point game, when he had 34 points in the second half, 18 points in the fourth quarter, Tatum was still making the right reads. And that's the growth that he's had, I would say, especially over the last 2 months, where it doesn't matter what the game is doing. He just kind of makes the right read. And on top of that, like, he also just hit some ridiculous shots. Like during the end of the third quarter, Celtics fall down by 8. And that was like trouble time. It could have easily gone the other way there. He hits a tough 3, step back 3. Then he draws a foul, which was like maybe not a foul on Nick Claxton, even though it held up on the review. And then all of a sudden the Celtics are within one possession going into the fourth quarter, and it's a game, and they've averted the crisis. And then Tatum was just dominant from there. So I thought he was clutch, even in the third quarter, if that makes sense. Like, he had some clutch buckets when they were teetering on the edge of losing, to keep them from getting to that place, and to keep the Nets from gaining hold.
And I think the thing that's important is there is no like settling for shots, and he kept the pressure on the Nets. I think the Celtics did a good job of like just being the more aggressive team. And it's something that like I've noticed, especially in this run lately. And I think Marcus Smart has a lot to do with it, but just putting the pressure on the other team's defense, running off makes, like really trying to get downhill. If you look at the fourth quarter where Tatum had 18 points, he only attempted 3 threes and was actually got to the line 8 times. He was very much attacking the basket, and I think that's a problem with – I think it's just like a way you attack the Nets. They have a pretty small team. They were like relying on Nick Claxton a lot, like who's a decent player, but he's just like not an experienced rim protector in any regard. And so the Nets are pretty small. Andre Drummond didn't play at all in that fourth quarter, which I'm kind of surprised to see, because I thought he had some decent moments, especially on the offensive glass against them. But it felt like the rim was open, and with how the Celtics were shooting, especially Al Horford shooting a lot of threes and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, there was open for Tatum to attack, and he just kept attacking. And the Celtics had the Nets in foul trouble pretty much for the entire game. And I thought that was a kind of a huge part of them basically being able to put up 37 points in the fourth quarter, because they got to the line 16 times.
There were 10 fouls early in that game. Like, everyone was just picking up fouls. But yeah, and to your point about the Nets defense, like, they had Seth Curry legitimately guarding Jaylen Brown at the start of the game. Like, that was just their primary matchup, was Seth Curry on Jaylen Brown. I mean, good luck with that. But, you know, when you have Tatum going like that, and when you have the Celtics executing at the level they did to get him the right matchups and to get him in those advantageous situations, they're going to be a problem for a team with weak links in the playoffs. And you see it every year in the playoffs. It kind of devolves into like, not devolves, I guess evolves into, let's get our best player the best matchup possible and go from there. And like, if you have a bad defender, Tatum can target you. And the Celtics, the amount of different ways they did that, sometimes, you know, by getting him post-ups at the free throw line, other times by getting him in space against big guys, LaMarcus Aldridge, like, good luck trying to stay in front of a steaming hot Jason Tatum when he's, you know, hell-bent on getting to the rim. And so the Celtics really took advantage of all the weak links that Brooklyn had in a way that could translate to the playoffs. Obviously, Ben Simmons will probably come back at some point and help that Brooklyn defense. But it's going to be hard to have a weak link against the Celtics in the playoffs if they're that intent on getting the ball to Jason Tatum, and he is that intent on getting good shots for either him or his team.
breaking news, he was just named Eastern Conference Player of the Week, averaging 41.3 points over those three games, six boards, five assists, shooting 52% from the field and 40% from three. He's had a pretty damn good week. If you just look at like out-dueling Trae Young, Ja Morant, and then Kevin Durant in successive games. The fact that this game was an offensive shootout, and one, I think we can take the pessimist views. Does it make you kind of question the Celtics' defense a little bit? Because this is the first time they've gone up against a real star player. Or do you take a more optimist view? It's like now the Celtics have shown that they're not like a one-dimensional team, that like they can have a – they can go win a shootout and go toe-to-toe up against one of the best offenses in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for them to be able to score at that level because their defense isn't always going to have the success it's had most of the last 2 months. And I think we saw maybe not some of the weaknesses of their defensive strategy, but the way that teams will attack their defensive strategy come the playoffs. Like, it seemed like every possession, the Celtics were getting a big switch down to Kyrie or a big switch down to Kevin Durant. And it didn't always go well for the Celtics. Like, Al Horford is a wizard in space. He's been great, you know, on switches. Robert Williams has been fantastic protecting the paint as a weak side defender. But when you're going up against Kyrie and you're going up against Kevin Durant, like that's a lot tougher assignment. And even compared to Ja Morant the other night, like against Ja Morant, the Celtics were able to kind of invite him to where they're more comfortable, you know, like they were totally sagging off him and begging him to go to the paint where they would have all the length and size to stop him. You can't do that against Kevin Durant and Kyrie. Like, they lure you into where you're uncomfortable. And I thought that was pretty evident from a Celtic standpoint. Like, they had a lot of trouble guarding those guys.
Well, everyone has trouble guarding Kevin Durant because he can shoot with ease, but I thought they did a pretty decent job.
But not every team switches as much as the Celtics do, you know?
Yeah.
And so there will be a lot of stress on Horford. Like, I could imagine Horford in a fourth quarter of a playoff game just getting targeted every single time, you know, or Grant Williams.
Don't you feel a little bit comfortable having, like, obviously Al Horford, you don't want him guarding someone like Kyrie or Trae Young on every single possession, but he, like, there were some possessions where he held his own on Kyrie and like he did his pretty good on Ja Morant. I think the Celtics have enough like just defensive skills where I think they're okay with that. And then if you really do, or you're just Al Horford's getting abused on the perimeter possession after possession, like they can just not switch every time. He's by no means getting abused, but like in the everything goes poorly. And it, like, they have enough talent and skill, and I feel like they're smart enough on defense, especially Horford, where they just could not – they could just stop switching. And it feels like – although we haven't really seen them do it, they've stuck pretty much to the switching everything lineup, and maybe that's something they want to experiment with as they head to the playoff run. But, they don't necessarily have to run that kind of – that explicit type of defense. But I agree that's, like, that – if you're going to attack the Celtics, you put your best player – your best perimeter player, and you try to have them attack – Al Horford or Rob Williams.
And look, we're talking about, you know, attacking Al Horford or Rob Williams, who are both really good defensive players. And, like, it's tough to beat those guys. Like, not a lot of guys are going to have success in an ISO against the Celtics because they have those guys, because they have smart defenders everywhere else. And when you're comparing, like, going one-on-one against Al Horford versus going one-on-one against Seth Curry or LaMarcus Aldridge in space, it's like, okay, like the Celtics have better defenders there. But I also think like the Nets attacked that defense in the way that we'll see the Celtics need to hold up when it really matters. So I thought from a matchup standpoint, it was a fun game to watch. And maybe, you know, an illustrative game. Is that even a word?
Illustrative? Illustrative? Yeah, I think it's illustrative.
Yeah, it illustrated how the Celtics will have to defend come playoff time. And so that was fun. Ime's funny, man. He'll really just load guys up with minutes. Like, Tatum played, I think, 23 minutes after halftime or 22 and a half or something. It was just like they reached a point where they decided that dude's not coming out of this game. That dude is staying there and win this thing for us. And I know he was going, but it's a regular season game. And still the Celtics were like, yep, 41 minutes, load him up. Let's do this thing.
Well, he did balance that out by only playing Al Horford 30 minutes. We saw an 8-man rotation go to 9. We saw Daniel Theis get a nice little 10 minutes in there. Also shocking to see right now, Tatum had 17 free throws attempts. Second on the Celtics was Theis with 8. So he made his minutes felt with a plus 11 in 10 minutes. Just great moments off the bench from old Danny Two Blocks, who only had one block, unfortunately.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's go to Michael D right now. Join us live on the Athletic app. He raised his hand. We can hear what he has to say. Michael, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good, fellas. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
Great, man.
Hey, my question is, well, my statement is, I like Tatum. I like both of the Jaylens. I've been a Celtic fan since the Red Auerbach days. Now, you know, they're talking about he scored 50, the most 50-point game since Larry and all this good stuff. You're not – he can't take 30 shots a game and have the Celtics win like that. It's not going to happen. The scoring has to be more balanced, and we got to get more production, scoring production from the bench. I think our defense is okay, but the scoring has to be more balanced. I think teams will say, hey, if he's going to take 30 shots – let him beat us. He can't do it every night.
That's probably fair. I mean, you're not going to score 50 every night. And to your point, like I do believe that when the Celtics get to the playoffs, the shooting, scoring, and playmaking around Tatum will be challenged. And other teams will be more willing and more capable of forcing the ball out of his hands. But I think at the same time, you know, Tatum has really grown at making the right play and lifting up the guys around him. And it's not every night that he's going to go out and shoot 30 shots anymore. A lot of the time, you know, he's drawing that attention and using it to free up other guys. So I think in the past, you know, that might have been more of a worthy concern. But the way he's playing, the willingness he's had recently to get the ball out of his hands and do it at the right time to the right guy has been very promising. And he's becoming one of those guys that make the right decision and set their team up with a pretty good look the vast majority of the time they get the ball. And that's huge for the Celtics. Like, that is the most important thing for the Celtics probably long-term, is that Jason Tatum continues to evolve from, you know, the score first, you know, super talented guy to a guy who commands every possession and gets the right guys the ball at the right times and really sets things up for everybody. And I think he's doing that.
I also don't think he really forced shots down the end. It wasn't like it was him taking contested twos. He took a couple contested threes in the third quarter that was just like, and he made them, and it was like, oh, wow, he might go for a big number tonight. But especially late when there's like, bucket for bucket, the game was tied. I mean, it was tied with like 3 minutes left. It was a very close game. It wasn't feel like it was just Jason Tatum up against the Nets. It felt like they were well, one, the team was looking to get him the basketball, but it wasn't like he was forcing shots. He was getting to the line and was just extremely efficient. I mean, you look at the final quarter, 5 for 8, 18 points and getting to the line 8 times. It's just a damn good quarter. It didn't feel like kind of the bad isolation basketball we've seen in the past with this kind of this iteration of the Celtics team. And so I think if a team goes into a playoff series and says, we're fine with having Jason Tatum score 30 shots, I feel like that's the downfall of that team. Like, I think that they're really going to try and force the ball out of Jason Tatum's hands and force the other guys to make plays. I don't know if he's going to get the opportunity to take 30 shots in the playoffs.
And that's a growth, is how does he do it for everybody else? You know, and I think, you know, listening to Marcus Smart, he was the one out there complaining about Tatum and Brown earlier this season, how they never passed. And now he's like, yeah, that dude's playing a lot smarter. He's getting us all involved. And that's after a game in which he takes 50 shots. So I do think Tatum has taken his game to another level. And the Celtics are really benefiting from that. And I think you see that, like, it's helping Al Horford get better shots and make a better percentage.
He is shooting ridiculous, or not ridiculous, but just like much improved from three. And I feel like a lot of that is just like his shots have been that much more open because people are taking a little bit more of steps just to try to slow Tatum in the paint.
Yeah. And the other guys, like, there's more of a commitment team wide to getting a better shot. The Celtics are, it's funny because 3 games ago, before they played, maybe it was 2 games ago before they played the Grizzlies, Al Horford kind of said, like, yeah, we don't need to gauge ourselves. Like, we're good guys.
And then immediately after that game, after they beat the Grizzlies, it was like, it was great to measure ourselves up against to grow one of the better teams in the league. He just completely lied to the media the first time.
But I think he was telling the truth. I think he actually believes in the progress that they've made and believes in their defense, which is now number one in the league, I think, if they still hold on to that spot after giving up however many points they gave against Brooklyn. And like this, they believe this is sustainable. And it wasn't just because it was against bad opponents that, and now we've seen it, you know, they beat Atlanta. They gave up 33 points in the second half. They took it to the Grizzlies. Like, that was a close game for a little while, but for the most part, if they didn't have some really bad turnovers in the first half, that might've been a blowout. And then, you know, took a great game from Kevin Durant on the chin and still beat the Nets with both KD and Kyrie Irving for, I think, just the fourth time this season. So it's been quite a stretch for the Celtics. And I do think Tatum's play has a lot to do with that. His on-off numbers are just stupid. Over the last 30 games, which is almost half a season, you know, like that's more than a third of the season, they are outscoring teams by 17.4 points per 100 possessions with him on the court.
That's wild.
And they are totally even, zero net rating without him. So
that's not too bad. Feels like a pretty good formula.
And obviously, yeah, part of that is he's part of a starting lineup that has crushed people. But basically, whenever Tatum's on the court right now, the Celtics are just demolishing teams. He's playing great, great two-way basketball.
And I agree that you probably, like, the starting lineup all was in double figures and the bench only scored, quick math, 14 points in that game. And you're probably going to want a little just bit more contribution for just coming from the bench. I mean, Grant Williams missed all his threes. You expect him to be the best shooter in the league at this point, which is a wild thing to say, but I say that genuinely. Like, you expect Grant to make his threes. So you expect a little bit more offensive there. Derek White really only took 3 shots. Peyton Pritchard only took 3 shots. But you'd like, I think maybe, I don't know if that's a really concern. It would just be like, it would be nice. But if you like look forward to the playoffs, their starting lineup, the one that is absolutely killing guys, is going to play 35 minutes a game, like 35 of the 13. And then the way you structure the subs, like, you're going to have them like probably 3 of those players on the court. And it feels like the bench, you have faith in Grant, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and Daniel Tice to all give you like solid minutes. And for Tice, he's like, he proved in the playoff before. Grant Williams is shooting well. Derek White's probably your sixth man, and wouldn't be surprised to see him get kind of the majority of the minutes getting to the playoffs. I think that was the question I was going to ask you next, is after this win against the Grizzlies and against the Nets, has your expectations, not even expectations, but it's like what you think the ceiling for this season could be, has that changed based on these last or this last week of games?
No, not really. The Eastern Conference is still going to be hell. And
but why can't like, – it's going to be hell because someone's going to have to play the Celtics. Like this is what I was talking about on the last podcast when your Wi-Fi didn't work. But it's like I think like they have emerged as like one of the teams – one of the five teams that like could win the East. And I don't think I just thought they could win the East probably as much as like a week and a half ago. I just didn't think it was possible. But I feel like they're playing so much more – just better and efficient basketball, and their defense is so good that now I think anything is potable.
Well played. Well played. Especially, you know, a week before or less than a week before Kevin Garnett's retirement ceremony.
What if I just ended the podcast there?
That would have been a premature way to end the podcast, probably. But yeah, I mean, do they have a non-zero chance to win the East? Sure. But, like, the Sixers are, like, James Harden and Joel Embiid are going to be really, really difficult to stop. The Nets with Ben Simmons, you know, who knows what they'll look like with him, but that's a huge piece for them that they haven't seen yet. And some of the teams in the East are just kind of an experiment. Like right now, they don't know what they can be. They don't know who they are. They're just trying to figure things out. The Sixers and Nets come to mind the most. But then you have the Heat, who are extremely talented, extremely tough. So I just think there are a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference with a chance. And are the Celtics one of those? Sure. But you're going to have to be really freaking good for three straight series to win the East.
The thing I like about the Celtics' chances, though, is that there's not a team out there that is like, oh, God, the Celtics can't play them. That's a horrible matchup. I think you immediately think that about Embiid just because he's giant. But with the Celtics having the best defense in the league and like the fact that they're able to play the kind of heavy switching offense – like, I just think, like, maybe they, I just don't know. Like, of course, no one can really slow down Embiid, but it feels like out of anyone in the Eastern Conference, the Celtics have the best kind of track record with Al Horford of slowing him down. Same can be said about Giannis. I don't think that, like, you're not going to, like, completely shut down Giannis, but it feels like having Al Horford on him and then having kind of weak side help with Robert Williams is a pretty good solution. There's no matchup out there that's, like, immediately screams like the Celtics are not going to be able to play this team close. And so I think the fact that they have such a good defense and which is able to keep them in games, and then you combine that with Jason Tatum, like where does he rank in terms of the best players in the Eastern Conference right now? I think he's fourth behind, and this is not in order, but Giannis, Embiid, and Durant. Like I just
Harden.
I think he's better than James Harden right now just because what he's giving you defensively. And I think James Harden is like a half a step slower than he was when he was in Houston.
We'll see.
I mean, I'm also incredibly biased. Like I could absolutely be wrong, but I feel like just his ability to dominate on offense, what he did on Sunday, in combination with the league's best defense, feels like a winning formula, especially in the playoffs when things kind of slow down.
Yeah, the defense especially, and the versatility of the defense and the intelligence of the defense. And, you know, I think the IQ level that the Celtics have around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown now is much better than it was last season, much better than it was at the beginning of this season, you know. Ime Udoka basically isn't playing anyone who doesn't think the game at a high level around those guys.
Is that why they signed Sauce Castillo? Because he's a high-level thinker?
I think they signed him because he went bonkers in the G League. And
so did Isaiah, and they didn't sign Isaiah again. Same team, but same bonkers.
They want all like 6'7" shooters, you know, or 6'6" shooters or whatever it is. And that's why they got Hauser. That's why they got Matty Fire. And that's why they got my man Nick Stauskas. But let's be honest, Ime Udoka plays 8 guys normally. None of those guys will touch the court. The guys who do, Al Horford, great IQ at both ends of the court. Robert Williams is really growing in that regard. He's a really good passer, especially for someone with his athleticism and rim running ability. Like, that combination is rare. Marcus Smart has been playing for the last 2 months, like, just great basketball. Derek White, bring him off the bench rather than Dennis Schroeder or Josh Richard. Like, that's just a huge upgrade in IQ. Grant Williams, another guy who really thinks the game at a high level. So there's a lot of intelligence all of a sudden on this team. And I think Tatum and Brown being as willing as they have been to pass it and get off the ball and play off the ball sometimes, like, that's helped set up those other guys to use their IQ. Like, it's all working together right now for the Celtics in a way that it didn't come close to doing earlier in the season. The transfer, it really is a wild transformation. Like, I'm not sure I am sure that I've never covered a team that transformed like this during the middle of a season. From, like, they played puke-inducing basketball at the beginning of the season. Like, you watched them and you left, you felt sick to your stomach. You're like, these dudes just – it was horrible to watch.
Remember that game against Portland where they just, like, missed a shot for the final 9 minutes of the game? Like, that was wild.
Yeah, and that was, like, semi-regular in the fourth quarter, not to that extent, but they collapsed all the time. And for that team to go and now play such a really selfless brand of basketball lately has been stunning. And I think Udoka deserves a lot of credit because he never let the players off the hook. And before you know it, they were listening to him. And they were improving in the ways he wanted them to improve. And now they're like just a lights out defense that has really, really improved offensively. And I mean, the last 2 months, like, it's not the same team. It's just not. They are a totally different basketball team than they were when they were 16 and 19 or 18 and 21 or whatever it was that they were. Like, it's crazy that group of basketball players played like they did earlier this season and now is playing like this. It's just, it really is wild.
One of the things that's been pretty impressive about this win streak is just how the Celtics have reacted to runs by the other team. Because we all know, being basketball fans, that basketball is a game of runs. But coming back 14 down to start the third quarter against the Hawks, I think they did something similar against the Grizzlies. Against the Nets, it was the second quarter. They were just down 5, and they immediately went on a run. I think in the third quarter, you mentioned the Celtics were kind of down a decent amount, like 8 or 9 late in the quarter, and then Tatum kind of went back on that run. They've just reacted and responded to a way, whether it's coming out of the quarter or coming out of timeouts, they've just never really, like, let themselves get out of games. And they've always kind of – maybe it's just – I don't know what Ime has done. Clearly, he being Eastern Conference Player of the Month or Coach of the Month has helped out. But just their kind of response to runs like that has just been, I think, the most impressive thing, is because I feel like they used to fall down 20 and then, like, spend all game trying to come back and then maybe get it and then maybe choke it away. They're just not getting down 20. They're not getting down 10 really at all. I mean, it happened against the Hawks, and they kind of had that shitty first half, but they immediately bounced back, and we just didn't see them do that against two very strong opponents in the Grizzlies and Nets.
Yeah, and I think the ability to bend but not break is, I think it all comes down to belief. Like you could tell early in the season they weren't trusting what they were supposed to do. And I think a lot of their fourth quarter collapses came down to that. And sometimes that was Tatum and Brown were supposed to pass and didn't do it. Sometimes it was, you know, you're supposed to run the play again. They wouldn't do it. Now they seem to be trusting in what they're doing and not settling. Like they are hunting for better shots. And then defensively, they're just playing at a totally different level. I think even as they were good early in the season, they were top five, but over the last 2 months, like that defense has been wow. So yeah,
do you think
a different level of trust now? I think.
Do you think the biggest reason for the trust? Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just saying, and maybe like playing so much bad competition in a row, like really benefited them. Like they just kicked the shit out of teams and were able.
Hey, we're pretty good at basketball.
We're able to start seeing the success. And then all of a sudden it's like a snowball thing. And I don't know whether that's actually the case, but certainly like just beating the fuck out of bad teams like could probably help you believe a little bit. And then you get in a game with a good team, you get in a close fourth quarter. And because you've seen, you know, a bunch of wins, the playing the way that they're supposed to, then that translates more often and in a better way to the end of the game. And obviously health is a huge factor here. Like they got healthy and they're much better when they have everyone in the lineup. You know, they've missed a few guys to games here and there, but it hasn't been like a long string of games where any of their key players has missed during this stretch. And I think that's really important, especially when you're playing eight guys, sometimes eight and a half guys, but normally just eight guys. Like if you're missing one of those guys and you have to fill in with someone who's doesn't deserve to be in that rotation, that could be a big downgrade. And I was wondering what they would have done if Jaylen Brown had to miss more time with Aaron Nesmith out. Like, would they just have played Grant Williams more at three? I don't know.
The three bigs
not a real big go to the end of the bench guy. And the end of the bench is like really end of the bench now. They don't really have any guys with NBA experience back there except Nick Stauskas. Like
he wouldn't have turned to Malik Fitz. Malik Fitz isn't getting minutes right then. Malik Fitz,
Keelan Martin, there's just not a lot of options back there. I don't think Ime will get there unless he's absolutely forced to.
How much do you think of the improvement and the kind of the trust and the belief comes from the fact that Dennis Schroeder's not on the team? that was clearly just a joke, but like as you were talking, part of me believed it. It was just like they have a lineup now where they don't have to turn to someone who's one, bad defensively, and two, pounds the ball into the ground. And like I do think playing a bunch of terrible teams helps because, you know, they started this winning streak before they traded Dennis, but like they're certainly playing a type of basketball where every single person is locked into on the defensive end. There's no like lapses there, and that every single person on the offensive end is kind of moving the basketball. So how much of it was addition by subtraction, losing Dennis and Enes Kanter?
I think there's been a lot of progress that has nothing to do with those guys, but I do feel like for, you know, the beginning parts of the streak, it did seem like everyone else was getting on the same page and Dennis just wasn't on that page. and you could see in a lot of those games, like the stats for him, the plus minus stats, it was like the starters were killing it, and then the bench would come in and things would not like totally fall apart, but just weren't living up to the same standard. And now I feel like the Celtics have, you know, Derek White is just a good fit. He's someone who just by the way that he is going to do a lot of the things that fit into the way they want to play. I don't want to put a lot of it on Dennis, because I think at the beginning of the season, like, there were a lot of issues. And when Jaylen Brown was out, like, he helped keep them afloat during that stretch. But I do think as everyone else got on the same page, he just wasn't there. So it was good to get somebody else who was.
Okay, that's fair. It probably was not nice of me to be that mean to Dennis, but I thought it was a good bit. All right, we'll wrap it up here. Wait, did you see the picture of when Jason Tatum, he did something ridiculous, and it's like the front row, he's walking back to the Celtics bench, Wick has his fans both in the air, Pags is going crazy, everyone is screaming, hands up, and then Mike Gorman, who is not calling the game because it was on ABC, just sitting down, hat on, looking kind of like an undercover cop, just not impressed whatsoever. Did you see that picture?
He's a journalist. The man's a journalist.
Oh, Mike Gorman doesn't root for the home team?
No. You're not going to see Mike Gorman jumping up and down, doing jumping jacks and getting on the Jumbotron. Like, you're going to see Mike Gorman focus. You're going to – I mean, give the guy credit. He was there. Somebody else was calling the game. It was it an ESPN game?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And so, and he's there. He's there watching. He's there in the second or third row, wherever he is. Give that man his respect. Don't make Gorman out to be the bad guy because he's a journalist, because he's a man with professional ethics.
That is one of the more ridiculous defenses of Mike Gorman, that I was just impressed by his stoicism. I was not taking a shot at the legend. But to call him an objective journalist is bending the truth in a way that I was not prepared for, Jay King.
He holds himself to the highest journalistic ethic.
Okay, that is fair. The only other thing that has happened is Isaiah Thomas did get signed by the Charlotte Hornets. And Jay, I was just curious, is a power combination of Isaiah Thomas and Nick Friedman, is that potable?
You will make it possible, even if it's not.